Groans, Grown Folks Nation, it's your love man here, and it's time once again for the Inside the Album podcast.
GrownFolksMusic.com.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, it has been a minute since we've opened the microphone for this particular podcast lineup, I'll say. We've done a few things, but this is like, what is this? I would call this like OG, like the original, the original crew for the Inside the Album podcast. You have your love man and DJ KKC, and today we are talking about an album and an artist, and I think just a particular point in time that is very, I would say, looking back on it, it's very different than a lot of what we experience today, and it's almost, for lack of a better word, it's almost like strange, like a strange phenomena, I'd say. So what we're talking about today, what we'll be discussing on Inside the Album, is the 1991 sophomore release from Vanessa Williams, The Comfort Zone. And let's just start the conversation here. I think a question we often wrestle with here at KKC is your first introduction to the recording. Now, the album was released on August 20th, 1991. August 20th being a kind of special day for me because that was my grandmother's birthday. Yeah, I'm always surrounded by Leos, but yeah, my grandma was real special. And her birthday was August 20th, 1991. I'm not sure. No, I wasn't able to be down in North Carolina on that particular birthday. I'm sure I was doing other things as a 21-year-old, a newly 21-year-old, feeling myself. But so yeah, KKC, what was kind of your introduction to the album, or maybe even, you know, maybe you were pulled in like a lot of us by the first single, which was released a month prior to the release of the album. So Running Back to You was the first single from The Comfort Zone, and it was released July 16th of 91. So a little prep time before the album was dropping. So yeah, how did you find out about, yeah?
How I was introduced to this album, I was introduced, like you said, to the single first, and not the single, the video. I can tell you exactly where I was.
Exactly, yep. Exactly.
I was sitting in the hair salon.
Oh, okay.
In the hairdresser's chair. Mm. I don't know why this memory is so vivid, but it is.
Yeah.
Shout out to Crystal. I can't even remember her last name. In Detroit, wherever you are, if you're still doing hair, she was really good. And we were both young. I had 20 years old, and she was the same age. And so she had just gotten in the hair game, but she was really good. And she was doing hair cheap because she had just gotten in the game. So I was going to her every week, and we were in the salon, and she was doing my hair. And they had the TV on, as they do the radio and the television on in the salon. And she was kind of doing my hair, and I was kind of getting my hair done, but we were both kind of looking at, I don't know, if it had to have been BET. It had to have been. Yeah. Like, I can't think of any other show
this video
would have come on. And we both were like, what? But that's what, like, huh?
Right. Yeah,
like,
sure.
And then by the end of it, we were like, she did that? Okay, Vanessa. Like, I remember us both being impressed by the video.
Yeah.
So that was my introduction to the Comfort Zone. And then I didn't get introduced to the album until a year later.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was one of those. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it just, a year later, I was, tell you where I was. I was in the, riding in the car, college road trip to the Circle City Classic in Indianapolis.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And the comfort Zone and maybe some other records. I don't remember what other records. I remember the Comfort Zone was one of the, might have been the cassette. Not sure. I can't remember.
Right. 92, 91, yeah.
Might have still been a cassette. That took us on our trip.
Wow. Wow, that's, it was a similar thing. I'm pretty sure, my introduction to the single, to Running Back to You, was definitely video. And I had a similar visceral reaction. Like, I mean, I had checked out a little bit of the debut, the debut record. And, I mean, mainly, Dreaming and that was about it. And it was cool. I mean, it was like, but
you hadn't really, like you said, it was cool. Like, okay, the right stuff was colorful. She was dancing. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, that's Miss America. And they get, put it was after the fallout or whatever.
Sure.
And it was like, okay. It was just like, okay, it's cool.
Right.
It wasn't bad. It was nothing to criticize. It's just like, okay, it's cool. But I don't know about you, but my impression after seeing the Running Back You video was like, oh, she's really doing music. Like,
yeah.
I didn't, oh, okay, she's a music artist.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it was youth or what, but something hadn't connected that there would be another album.
Music. That's true. I felt the same way, because it was like the right stuff. And then she showed up on the, on the Tony record, Oakland Stroke, which was just kind of odd, I thought, not realizing that, that's kind of how those things work. I mean, they were on the same label. And so I didn't realize that her showing up on that was, kind of getting it ready again for her to, just keeping her in front of the public on the music side. But yeah, I was like, I didn't realize, this is really a thing. Like, she's
right.
She's doing this. And then
she's doing music.
Yeah. And then for what? I think what happened was, like I said, Dreaming was a beautiful ballad. And, what was the, not The Right Stuff, but I can't remember what debut single was from The Right Stuff, but that was a cool tune. But it felt like with Running Back to You, and then some of the other songs we'll talk about, it felt like instead of her or whoever was working with her musically reacting to what was happening musically, it felt like in some ways they were kind of right there or even maybe a little ahead. And I think that's what made people, kind of take notice. Like, oh, because this first single, I mean, you got to think about it contextually, what's happening in music at 90, 91. I mean, we're kind of in the middle of, it's kind of a strange brew of different things. I mean, and if you talk about black music, I mean, you're talking about the intersection of, what's left over from the 80s as far as Quiet Storm and really mature music.
Ballads, yeah.
Yeah. And then you've got New Jack Swing, which is kind of coming down from its apex, but still way up there. I mean, still kind of running, running the show.
And that programming definitely still running the show.
It was running the show. And then, of course, then you had the advent of something different, which was you know, really held more elements of pop, but like the ascension of like a sound like CNC Music Factory and those types of things, where it's just sort of like this mixture of, you know, dance music and pop and, you know, and all these things. So you throw all this stuff in, and I mean if you listen to Running Back to You, I mean, sample heavy and programming heavy, and you know, it just had that sound that the late 80s, early 90s was known for. But it definitely, I guess, for us, like viewing it for the first time in a 91, would have been like, oh, this is new. This is right. And she's doing it. And I dare not say maybe a little blacker. You don't know.
You know what? I don't think that you're off. Yeah. Or even, and I don't think that you're wrong. I think that I don't know. I don't really know how to articulate it, but I think that, you know, we had seen Miss America, and you know, that was before we had really seen a lot of women of color,
right?
In these pageants. And then this is a woman, and I don't mean to insult anyone, but this is a woman whose beauty I feel is more universal, or at the time might have been more acceptable to maybe white people looking at the pageant, maybe being okay with her being the face of America, of Miss America. Mm-hmm. And I just kind of felt like her presentation, she was a model and things like that, but I just, her presentation was very universal.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't urban at all, is what I'm trying to say. No. Nothing that could slightly ruffle a feather. Her whole demeanor, you know, and it just was very universal. It was a good look for black people in America. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying there was nothing that was too urban for the masses.
Nah, because I remember watching it, you know, and then, you know, the realization, and I mean, I never questioned, you know, it was not, don't take it like I'm questioning someone's blackness. I'm not, but, you know, you look and you're like, oh, okay. And then, the song selection, she's singing, you know, Happy Days Are Here Again. I'm like, sure, I guess.
It was very universal and just very middle of the road. It didn't go either way, or if it did go, I think it may have gone toward, you know, what white people would enjoy and what maybe the white judges would vote for.
Mm-hmm.
So by the time we get to the comfort zone, I agree with you. It is very, it's clear that we're working in the R&B genre with this, this single and with the video. I can't separate the video from the song. The way the video comes out with her, you know, dancing. We kind of saw that in The Right Stuff. It was like, But I just felt like, I thought like they were trying to say she's doing music and we're coming for y'all now.
That's like what
we're coming for y'all, and we're sending her. And we had just never considered her because we've got Janet Jackson in the game, right?
True.
And I think this is about the time, so we've got Mariah Carey, but she's a different artist. She's a songstress. So, but in terms of that, just I'm trying to think of who else we may have had. I think we had Karen White, and Karen White was young, so they kind of had her doing a little bit of dancing and things like that. And that that first video, I don't know why the name of that song escapes me, but I'm really trying to think about who they had. And like you said, coming out of the 80s, you know, we were dealing with songstress Stephanie Mills, you know, Patti LaBelle, Regina Bell. Yeah.
You're right.
But they were still so mature. I felt like with them, it's like, okay, we're were kind of coming. I don't know that it was a direct thing to compete with Janet Jackson or anything like that, but I felt like they were, it was a on purpose, the way that she was presented. And I, it worked in the sense that it took her seriously. And, you know, not to keep going on about the video, but what is it interesting about this video and the Comfort Zone video, and maybe even the work to do, but that with these first two videos from this album, you know, a lot of people now are upset with these female artists. They need to put some clothes on. Why do they always have on a onesie and a leotard and stockings? How come nobody wears pants anymore? How come there's not dresses? Right. Well, rewind. Somebody please go look at the Running Back to You and the Comfort Zone video.
Hey, please. Because you...
this is, to me, and I, when I was watching it again, I mean, I felt this way for a while.
Yeah.
But she was the prototype for what we see now. Yeah. I just think we always tend to associate the past with that was a better time, that was a classier time. And I'm not saying that she isn't classy or that it wasn't, it was presented in a very classy way, but that is the prototype for the R&B diva that we see now.
Yeah.
And someone commented on YouTube, and I agree with this comment, that Beyonce's early team for her first solo album, that is all somebody was watching Vanessa Williams' video.
Absolutely.
Because it's the big hair, the big fancy earrings, the makeup. Vanessa Williams in that video, she's in a onesie, she's in a leotard with fishnet stockings and thigh-high boots. She's just sitting in a leather jacket. She's just sitting in a chair, so you don't really notice that. Then she's in jeans and just a bra. And she's wearing boxing gloves, so it distracts you. Then she's in, when they get to the bridge, she's just in a sequin onesie and stockings. And she turns around and gives you the booty and everything and comes back to the camera. I mean, she gives you that. So, and then, you know, so all of the things that we see now and we don't, we think we don't like, that's Vanessa Williams. That's Vanessa Williams. She, well, they brought that out with her. I don't remember too many other people they brought that out with just yet.
No. And it's interesting to note that because, I mean, on two levels. One, and I'm going to make an apology for something in a minute, in 1 second, but one, the two levels is that are that that just speaks to the hypocrisy of generations. I mean, we all, every generation does that. You know, we just sit around and we talk about, I mean, and I'm not saying like there aren't things clearly in this generation that should be looked at critically, but at the same time, don't, you know, we should not, okay, or that shouldn't be the first thing we go to, always talking about, back in such and such as, like you said, go back and watch the video. You know, you'll see. And like you said, and what a great point. She really is a prototype. Because I was thinking about that. When I looked at it, I was like, oh, wow. And the you know, the extensions and the this and the that and the you know, I mean, yes, that's her natural
color. They really used her beauty.
Yeah.
They used her beauty in those videos.
Mm-hmm.
It was not about her singing. And I don't mean that to say that
she can't sing,
but they used that. To me, those are some of the first really, like, because you had Janet Jackson still dancing and stuff in her videos. She hadn't really gotten, like, super sexified yet.
Right.
You know, Rhythm Nation, she had on head to toe black and everything.
Right. And baseball hats. No, that was coming.
Really,
that was next. That was the next album.
Yeah, that was next. And perhaps Vanessa had something to do with that because they were just like, you are beautiful and we're getting ready to use your beauty, honey.
Yeah, I mean, look at the number of close-ups they do. And I mean, I don't know, like subliminal messaging or whatever, but you know, I mean, yeah, that's her natural eye color, but they do a lot of tight shots on her, like they go right to the eyes. Yep. And you just go like, oh, okay. And like I said, obviously in 91, I wasn't paying attention. I was taking the bait, I guess. They were like, you know, so yeah, it's
they,
like.
They sold it. They sold, I mean, it was just, it was a whole thing. The song had a nice swing to it. You know, you could like the song. And she looked amazing. And it was colorful. And it, the video moves a lot. Like, if you have neurological issues, you can't watch that video because it jerks and it moves a lot.
Yeah,
it's not a steady camera on purpose or whatever. But yeah, it does a. That is, to me, that was the prototype. If you, you know, like, what's going on now, or if you notice what's going on now, I think that she's kind of the start of that.
Yeah, and you know what's interesting, and I want to pick up on a point. After I apologize, but my quick apology was I was fixated on something else. I was fixated on the on the second single from The Right Stuff, which is He's Got the Look. The first single was The Right Stuff, which I was like, I don't know why that wasn't registering in my brain. But anywho, back to the comfort zone and the point I wanted to pick up on. You made such an excellent point, and this is something I was thinking about in researching this album. And just like you said, like I, what I love to do, which is to provide cultural context, and then kind of, you know, look at it from what we're dealing with today. You know, speaking of Vanessa as a prototype and what was happening with her in 91, and you made an excellent point. And this word, the word that drives me nuts, but it's a word that's just been placed in our, you know, it's just there, and we deal with it. But the whole notion of quote unquote urban, right? And what I wanted to point out, and you know, and maybe people will disagree with me on this, but the comfort zone and this, you know. I'd say this album more so than other albums of Vanessa's. I think this album was more of a cultural touchstone for her. I mean, it was really in the forefront. And this was the soundtrack, I want to say, for the Different World generation. And what I mean by, and what I mean by that, and I don't want anybody to take like I'm being bougie, because I'm not really, but this is, to me, this is the kind of record that is aspirational R&B, pop, dance, new jack, whatever you want to call it. And I feel like what has happened for a number of reasons, and we don't have to get into all of them. I mean, we don't have the time to get into all of it. But I feel like at some point, the notion of having an artist like this and music like this just went away. And like everything went to a urban aesthetic, like urban,
which and would be fine if it didn't. It all seems to trip and fall into ratchet, and it's not just black, it's just underbelly of blackness that black people aren't really you know what I mean, that we don't really do.
Yeah, and let's be honest, I mean, and this is something that you know I'd say, I don't know if it's unique. Well, it's not necessarily unique to the black experience, but we can explain it in ways that people will understand. I mean, yes, there are levels, there are issues of class in every society and levels to every society. But I'll make this analogy that, you know, the comfort zone and Vanessa, you know, what's happening with what she was doing here. It's more like First Baptist Church, and now like And it's no diss. Let's just say this is First Baptist Church, and perhaps the offerings these days are, you know, maybe a little smaller. Maybe storefront.
Right, storefront.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, and that's I'm not.
She's just working with a bigger budget, a different presentation, and a plan.
Yep.
A true plan. And along the lines of what you were saying is that, you know, if we were talking about her introduction in the pageant to us as being very mainstream and being not too urban, then I think the comfort zone is her homecoming.
Uh-huh.
I think that because America was so pissed off by the pictures and all that kind of stuff. I remember during that time, my mother having Essence magazine when the whole controversy broke, and they had done a spread on her anyway, and then they kind of had to add an editor's note about, you know, her not being Miss America anymore, blah, blah, blah. And I just think that there was this, I don't know how to say it, but I think that there was this rush to, I don't know if it was a rush for us to claim her or some PR people, and maybe I've got to give her ex-husband credit. Okay, we've done that.
Uh-huh.
Now we're going back home. We're moving back to mama's house. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? We're going back to the neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And I think the right stuff was an introduction to it, and we just kind of saw it and said, oh, okay, that's cool.
Yeah.
And then this album came, and it was like, oh, she's black. Yeah. And she's throwing down. Oh, and this is R&B. And I'm going to get her album. And it's just kind of, if her introduction to us was just kind of, aspirational in the sense that we can do this, we can win a title like Miss America, but this was, I don't know, I don't want to say it was PR, because that would suggest it's not authentic, because I think that this effort is authentic. I'm not saying that at all. I think this was coming back home, because ever since this, we have claimed Vanessa Williams.
Oh, yeah. You know what? That's so interesting to think about it in those terms. It's true. It's like, once this came out and she was pregnant on The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, you know, no, I'm just playing, but the episode was cute. But no, seriously, like, this record was like, oh, yeah. You know, yeah. Oh, yeah, 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 yeah. We get down with... And it's a different thing. Like, we keep, you know what I mean? Like she was here in Richmond a couple of weeks ago. I had to do something so I didn't go, but she was, you know, was part of the Richmond Jazz Fest. And, you know, I was interested to see what the crowd would have been like, the crowd reaction. But I messed with Vanessa. I remember one time, gosh, this was years and years ago, probably the late 90s, and she did a live concert on, gosh, was it Lifetime or, you know, some Bravo, one of them stations. And, you know, she came out, and I mean, clearly the stuff that resonated with me the most was the Comfort Zone tracks. I mean, that was the stuff like, oh, okay, yeah, that was when we messing with you heavy. And then, of course...
You know what, she has taken us places. I was just thinking about this, too. Mm-hmm. To her credit, she's taken us places from her winning the pageant, mm-hmm. and then from her, what I consider, homecoming. And then, as soon as they put her in R&B, they snatched her right back out of it.
Hold up. That's exactly where I was going.
They snatched her right back out of it.
That's what I was
saying. And I don't know if that had to do with her age.
Mm.
Because The Sweetest Days is a very different album.
Yeah.
And so if you were coming back for more of the comfort zone, you kind of got something different, because it was really adult contemporary and a little bit on the jazz side. But she just had that one... she got a great tune with Babyface. You can't hide love. You can't run from love. Something like that.
Yeah.
But we're talking about the comfort zone. But as soon as they put her in R&B, they snatched her back out. And I think, I don't know, it's because she was closer to 30 when comfort zone was out.
She would have been.
I don't really know who her competition was, that they felt like they couldn't keep that going for a couple of more years, but they snatched her back out. And I don't know if it has to do with Save the Best for Last, that they moved her straight to adult contemporary.
What I was just getting ready to say. I was like, yeah, and she did this, and we messing with her, and then all of a sudden, what happens?
She was Universal again. Yep.
Yep. And who can we thank for that? Oh, actually, we can't thank him for that. It sounds like his influence, but he wasn't on that record. I was about to say our boy, but nope, he wasn't on that one. He wasn't on Save the Best for Last. So. Sounds like a Brian McKnight thing, but no.
Yeah, like Love Is. And she put him on too. We could talk about that too. That Christmas special that you and I are still searching the world for the Holy Grail video.
That is the
of them sitting in 1991 Christmas,
ma'am.
Singing "It's Cold, Baby, It's Cold Outside." Yep.
Still
think it's a figment of our imagination, but it's not.
She said, "Hey, y'all, I want to introduce you to my friend. He has kind of like a smoky voice. He's blah, blah, blah." I'm like, who the hell is this?
Right. Yes. And we always, you know, make that Nat King Cole analogy, because he was just like Nat King Cole on the piano. And it was just so smooth. And it was just yes. And you took it seriously because.
Oh, yeah.
She had introduced it, and it was a great look.
It really was.
It's a great look.
Yeah. And it's funny because, as a sidebar, they had done that. I don't know if they did one in 90. They probably did, and I missed it. But I remember they did a similar thing in 89. I don't know if it was Christmas, but it was Christopher Williams and, like, Timmy Gatling. And, like, it was, like, all these people that Cassandra Mills was messing with.
Mm-hmm.
And they were on there, and they did a similar thing, like, kind of introducing folks and, you know, these different camps. I mean, unfortunately, that doesn't really happen these days. And I mean, I'm sure it happens in the rap world, but whatever black music is now, whatever it's called, it doesn't happen. It doesn't happen in that way. But anyway, yes, she did Save the Best for Last, and it was just a monster record. You know, you still hear it in dentist offices to this day.
Saving Grace. Yeah, that's her legacy.
It really is.
That's her legacy song, nominated for Grammys, Song of the Year, Record of the Year. That's her, and that's the kind of song you want people to know you because every white people, black people, yellow people, everybody knows that song, and it's going to continue to feed her, and it just takes her into different audiences.
Yeah. And
it takes her to different places.
And it is definitely one of those. And she didn't have to do a Mariah, she would have two versions of the video. But that was definitely a tune that I'm watching BET. It comes on. I'm like, what's on MTV? Oh, the same song. I mean, it literally happened numerous times. I mean, that just speaks to the appeal. You know, that's, like you said, a legacy and a signature song. And then she... Then Vanessa does something that I'm gonna tell you. She went five singles deep in the Comfort Zone, Running Back to You, the Comfort Zone, then Save the Best for Last. Now, if you look at this, by the time we get to Save the Best for Last, we're already into 1992. So we basically started the summer of '91, and then Save the Best for Last comes out in January of '92. So you can see what type of, you know, staying power this record has to go. That, and I mean, that was third single deep. They did come with Just for Tonight in April of 92. But I, like KKC, got hipper to the record. About almost a year to its release, almost a year, you know, when she releases Work to Do, which was like interesting and educational at the same time. Because I was like, hey, oh, wait a minute. This sound like the Isley Brothers, an average white band. What's going on here? What's going on here? But no, I mean, I like the single that much that I mean, obviously I would be fronting if I was like to say like, oh, I knew it was a cover when, because I'm not that old, so.
I didn't know it was a cover, because it wasn't one of Isley's more played tunes. Like you knew Between the Sheets.
And, oh yeah.
You know, some other jams that constantly got played, but no, I didn't know.
Yeah, I didn't know.
And then you know, she threw Drez on there, and she and Drez share the same birthday. By the way, I just happen to know that.
Okay.
And I don't think the same year, but the same day, and. She threw him on there, so, you know, that kept the urban piece in there, because that's when people were given, well, it's kind of started in the late 80s, but, you know, they were given rappers 8 to 16.
Eight to 16, and you in there, I mean, who was one of the first? Heavy.
And LaVert. Yeah, LaVert putting Heavy on. And
And then he got with Janet. And, I mean, that was not commonplace, and I mean, especially for.
And you just got a feature. That's all you got. You just got eight. You got, but you got no more than 16. Now it's flip-flop.
It's the reverse. it's like.
But now you just kind of you know, they just gave you a little something just to put the flavor on it, and that's kind of what worked. Yeah, just put the little urban, just a sprinkle on it. To let you know who this audience, you know, who this song is intended for. And it just kind of, it was a good single.
It was. I thought it was.
Let us know she can continue to, you know, get down. And she did make the song her own.
Mm-hmm.
The interesting thing about, you know, in looking up some notes for this album is that 5 Grammy nominations, but I think it's interesting that it includes Best Pop Female Vocalist. And that's very much a pop voice.
Oh yeah.
There's no soul in it, and I don't mean that as an insult. I just mean it doesn't have the nuances that we know from soulful singing or whatever. And she doesn't try to do a lot of vocal gymnastics.
She sings the song.
She's not. She just sings it. It's a melodic voice, a pretty low voice, but they made it work, and I think it's what's continued her career, because now she shows up, like you said, at all these jazz festivals, and she, especially around Christmas, Christmas.
Oh yeah, I forgot about her.
They rework the comfort zone and turn it out like those jams and turn them all into like jazzy pop tunes, and it's kept her doing shows, you know, when she's not acting. So in that sense, she was just a prototype. But she wasn't doing a whole lot of hollering or really just the soulfulness that we got from Patty, or even the heights that we got from Whitney. And okay, so that's who was out at the time, Whitney. And of course, Whitney was running the world, running the pop world. But but this was just a different. With that running back to you, it was just a different, with her dancing, and I don't know, it was just a little more urban than, I think we had just gotten to I'm Your Baby Tonight.
We
just got to that.
Yeah, so. You know what it was? It was coming down, because I'm Your Baby Tonight was fall of 90, and when Running Back to You came out, we were on Miracle. Was the big?
But we still hadn't seen. I mean, we had just kind of seen that kind of urban, flavor from Whitney. We had just seen that. I'm Your Baby Tonight.
And that's what's interesting. I hadn't thought about that. But yeah, I guess maybe that does add more whatever credence to my thesis that like this is like that. Those are two perfect examples. Like Comfort Zone and I'm Your Baby Tonight. Definitely like the human, and I mean I don't mean exclusively. I mean you're gonna see the entire breadth in any subculture. But I'm just saying like representative of the fact that nowadays you see nothing even remotely.
No,
I mean, not even close.
No, it is all very, somebody said urban cells.
Yeah.
And that's what they're doing. And even in pop music, there's more of an urban sway to it.
Yeah.
And I think that's for two reasons. I think that's because reason number one, the execs said urban cells.
Exactly.
And two, we have a generation now post Britney Spears, Justin Timberlake, Backstreet Boys, who kind of, when the cultures all kind of mesh together, you know, these young white artists who can dance, like the whole NSYNC came on. It's like, and anyone who says that they didn't notice NSYNC was kind of good is lying. Anyway,
I messed with them. They had
lying.
A couple of joints. Yeah, they're lying.
They're lying.
I even, and I'm a, yeah.
Their show was really good.
Yeah.
I think you say we're generation post them, that there's some people coming that are 10 years younger than them. If they're 35, there's just 25-year-olds. So, and I think that they have all been influenced by them, where the kind of cultures came together. And so even pop is in two ways that I hear it on the radio right now. It's either very, very EDM, very dance driven.
Yeah.
Or it's pop, but it has like soulful vocals. The only person I hear doing straight pop music is Taylor Swift.
Yeah,
If you don't count Bad Blood, if you don't count the track with Kendrick.
Yeah.
She's just kind of doing just a kind of very poppy, catchy. Her and Katy Perry, that's kind of catchy pop.
Right.
But
yeah, I agree.
Yeah, but it's. I don't know, but you're right. Right now, we don't have anything that's just, I can't think of any R&B that just, either some of the indie stuff is really good, but it's either kind of older sounding.
Yeah.
I don't know anything that just kind of sounds like young, fresh, but R&B.
You know,
now they're moving toward trap soul.
Yeah. I mean, the only thing, what's that guy's name? I can't think of his name, and forgive me, people, because I can't keep up sometimes, but I can't think of the guy's name, but he gets a little spin that he has that track that sounds like King. The track sounds like the greatest.
Oh, Gordon Banks?
Yeah, I'm sorry, Gordon.
I'm not dissing,
but that's every time I hear it, I'm like, that sounds like, and I mean, the reason I brought that up is because to me, that's like the only thing that somehow is, you can feel the strand of DNA from this stuff.
Yeah, familiar, but new. Yeah,
it's new, but it's not, like you said, it's not ratchet at all.
Right, it's not.
And it's not tractable. Yeah, it's just different.
It's funny that you say that, because the new artist I've been struggling with is Rojay.
Oh, yeah. Right.
You can see that there's something there that you want to like.
Yeah.
But there's so much trap ratchet mixed in.
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't been able to completely embrace it, because part of me goes, okay, Kim, this is what the new generation, this is what they're doing. You've kind of got to meet them where they are.
Mm-hmm.
And you can tell, you know, because he's got that that sample on Permission, that Oku sample. So, you know, he knows a little bit something about it. His delivery, you can tell he, you know, has listened to some soul records back in the day. But I still struggle with just a degree of, it's just always got to be like a pinch of ratchet in there. And I don't get it. Like, I don't. Yeah, I didn't.
Yeah.
I don't know.
And I often question, and I mean, I'm not questioning anyone's integrity, but sometimes I'm like, how much of that is you, the artist, and your statement that you're making, and how much is it, were you the artist looking at what's in the marketplace and saying, oh, well, if I kind of do this, And I mean, there's always...
I just think that's how they're living now. I just think how some of these young people are living. Like, this is commonplace. Like, you know, fake booties and all this kind of stuff. Like, that's what relationships are. And that's what sex is now. And that's what courting and dating is now. And I just think that's how... You know, part of it is, you know, maybe they're influenced by these records and think and the culture and the reality TV and think that's how they're supposed to be living.
Yeah,
and then now it's turned into this is how they're living. Like, that's that whole
And I mean,
hip hop generation, they really think that.
And not
so
and
you're
not,
right.
I mean, and not
you're
too.
Right about Vanessa being. Oh, not to cut it out. You're right about Vanessa being. Aspirational. It's just a good look. It's beauty. It's class. It's sophistication. It's R&B.
And I mean, not to beat the dead horse. And Miss Ms. Williams or whatever her last name is now since she remarried. Boo. No, I'm just kidding. But she. We were talking about prototypes, and I would kind of do this to put a bow on our discussion, but isn't it interesting that, you know, she had her challenges early in her career, and then she worked really, really hard to not, I mean, to distance herself in a way, I would say, quote unquote. And then it's now that's become, rightfully so, just a little footnote. And honestly, there's a lot of people who probably don't even know, which is great in some respects. And I'm not even sitting here like a prude, like she should be ashamed. That thought doesn't even cross my mind because my mother was nice enough when I was anyway. all right, 14-year-old boys, but isn't it just kind of, is the irony not lost on us that what happened to Vanessa Williams that caused her to lose her crown, that's a career move for people these days?
Wow. I hadn't even thought about it like that because they just apologized to her.
Mm-hmm. And they should have.
But you know, at the time, it was a major scandal.
Oh, sure.
She had to fight and come back, and perhaps, you know, it was a huge misstep, and you know, a youthful misstep, and you know, I don't know that they were completely wrong because that might have been my reaction at the time too. Well, you know, we've seen this. You can't be the face
of
you know, Miss America, but. I do thank them for apologizing to her.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's a different time now. That wouldn't have.
But
you're right that now these people are making these tapes and stuff and they're built upon this. And she had to, like you said, fight her way back to grace. And you have a whole generation that doesn't know anything about this scandal, but, you know, as it relates to this album, got a whole generation that doesn't know that she's an R&B diva.
Well, exactly. And that's what I think is the importance of us highlighting recordings like this. You know, I mean, there's probably people that just know her from Ugly Betty and don't make the connection that, like, oh, she was really... And I mean, like you said, for the comfort zone, the importance of it, it was, it wasn't like it was just, oh, it was just an album. I mean, it really was. For that period of 91, 92, it really was a cultural touchstone. I mean, maybe MTV a little bit with Save the Best for Last, but BET, these joints played every day. Like, every day. Like, I messed with BET heavy for years.
Right.
Late teens and early
to mid-20s. Oh, yes.
Yeah. Yeah,
where you went. You went to see videos because that's what they did. They did videos for these things.
Yeah, and Vanessa was on there daily.
Yeah,
so
she was.
Mm-hmm.
And she was a guest on there as well. Yeah. Like, you know, she would come on. Oh, yeah. So she did the R&B thing, and there's a generation that needs to know. Mm-hmm. Like, when they look at it, and especially when they see, well, I don't know how many people have had an opportunity to see her daughter, because her daughter's music
is just fantastic. It's
a lot different. But if you think that young lady is serving, somebody needs to go back and she got that from her mama.
She did get it from Mama. Yeah, Mama won't playing. And
No. Them first two videos came hard.
Yeah,
Mama came hard. She was laying in the desert in like a bathing suit. Come on now. Nah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it was a real desert, people, because I remember her talking about it, like, you know, the heat.
but it came out fabulous. They had Vanessa Williams in a dress. Vanessa Williams in a bathing suit. Vanessa Williams in the water. Vanessa Williams with handsome men, black men, white men, dancing around her. Oh, it was real. It was serious at the time.
Yeah. So we invite all of you all to do that. We invite all of you all to do, you know, what we do when we're researching. Just go back and, you know, if you experience this album in that era, go back and listen and watch the videos. And see if, you know, anything, you know, jumps out to you in a new way. And for folks who've never experienced this, I think this is a great opportunity just to listen. Again, you know, just to be aware, some of the music will sound like, you know, just from that, you know, point in time.
It's a very dated sounding album.
Because it was just, you know, I mean, I think that's what happens sometimes. You have albums that are for that moment. And then again, something like a Save the Best for Last, not to continue to harp on that, but it's true. I mean, that's just something, it's timeless. Yeah, it really is. Yeah. So, any other, parting things, thoughts, KKC, as we, you know, put the bow on the Comfort Zone, and I kind of shed a tear. Remembering being 21 years old.
I agree. Yeah, I know. I completely agree with you. I think that Running Back to You is great R&B and the Comfort Zone. Great R&B jazz. Save the Best for Last is timeless. And, you know, all the singles are good. And then the rest of the album, in my opinion, is not memorable because it's got the same 90s
pro drum programming.
But it's still like a work for the collection because the five singles were the right singles. Like you said, Save the Best for Last is timeless, but I need for people to go back and see the album. The album is worth having around because you need to see the R&B side of Vanessa Williams. I think that it is worth seeing. She doesn't talk about it much.
No.
They don't show it much anymore, but I just think that somebody needs to see it and be impressed, because you'll be impressed by it.
I totally agree. And this has just been, you know, when it was put on the table that we were going to talk about this album today, I just have a, you know, it's just a special place in my heart, because like I said, it exists in that 25-year, 91, 92 frame, and, you know, good times, bad times, whatever. But it's always fun to just look back and to say, oh wow, that's what was happening. And to think about, you know, as much as you hear a Rihanna on the radio or a Beyonce, that's how much you was hearing Nessa in 91. And it's true, you know. Okay. And I was glad to be able to be, you know, around to experience that, and for us to have this opportunity to talk about it today. And you know, who knows? You know, where this internet thing works. Maybe it'll make the rounds, and you know, Ms. Williams get a chance to hear it herself. All due respect to you, ma'am, and salute to you. And then maybe you'll call us. And we can talk to you.
Awesome.
And we can talk to you about your thoughts. So, but it's always great to get on the microphone and open up the line and talk with DJ KKC about these great albums from you know, long ago or not too long ago on the Inside the Album podcast. So we are hoping that all of you all are having a great time checking these out. Make sure you check us out everywhere that we are on the web, at grownfolksmusic.com, the home base, facebook.com/grownfolksmusic1, grownfolksmusic on Twitter, grownfolksmusic1, I believe, on Pinterest or somewhere. We're over there and everywhere. And just join the movement. Got lots of great things happening and coming up this year for you. And we're just glad that we're on the grow. So for DJ KKC, this is your love man, signing off once again for the Inside the Album podcast. GrownFolksMusic.com